Most of us first encounter the Dharma through words. Words we've read, words we've heard. Which means that we often miss the fact that Dharma is not a quality of words, it's a quality of the heart. The Buddha discovered the Dharma in his heart, and then he put it into words to communicate it. But the actual quality of the Dharma, the fact of the Dharma, the actuality of the Dharma, is something you find in the heart. And so we have to remember that all the words are there to point to something. They're part of the Buddha's strategy for teaching us, and they're part of our strategy for practicing, to help direct the practice. But not everything is nailed down in the words. And often the basic concepts that the Buddha taught are not nailed down. Here we are training the mind to find true happiness. Happiness is not a word that he defined. Mind is not a word that he defined. Probably because as you go through the practice, your appreciation of happiness is going to change. Your appreciation of the mind is going to change. So it's good not to have them nailed down too tightly. Even dukkha. He defines dukkha as the five clinging aggregates. But your understanding of what that word covers is going to change as you practice. It's going to get more refined. Things that you regard as pleasure right now, ultimately you may see that those things have their stress. Those things can entail dukkha. But for the time being, as long as they seem pleasant, you stick with them. Because the practice is strategic. It's trying to develop a quality of truthfulness in the heart. Truth is something that exists on many levels in the Buddhist teachings. There's the truth of statements, and there's the truth of perceptions, and there's the truth of actualities. And we start out with the perceptions, in other words, the labels we have in our minds. And we try to use true perceptions as we speak. Because otherwise, what would we have to direct our practice? We're already fabricating our experience through our perceptions, so the Buddha is giving us new perceptions to use. But notice, they're there to be used. We're not trying to arrive at a true perception. The Buddha makes this point many times in the Sutta Nibbata. There are cases where he says you go beyond truth. In other words, you go beyond the truth of perceptions because you've arrived at the truth of an actuality, a quality of truth in the heart. And that's something that doesn't have to do with words. We can see this, and Buddhist scholars can lie to us. It's all over the place. You can take the words of the text and you can twist them into almost anything. But the question is there truthfulness? I was reading a passage by John Fund today talking about his early years as a monk. He'd sit up all night. He said if he was going to fall asleep, he'd fall asleep while he was sitting. He got tired of sitting, he'd walk. Got tired of walking, go back and sit. Because, as he said, he didn't want to, if it turned out that he wasn't going to gain awakening in this lifetime, he didn't want it to be through his laziness. There's a story in the canon that's a cautionary tale about I think he's a member of the Sakin clan. And when he died, the Buddha said, you know, if he had gone off and started practicing early in life, he would have become an arahant. If he'd gone off in the middle of his life, he would have become a non-returner, a stream enter. In other words, he could have guaranteed that he wouldn't have to fall to the lower realms. But he never got around to practicing, out of laziness or whatever. So his opportunity was wasted. He had the potential, but he wasted it. And John Fun said he didn't want that to be true of him. So he really gave himself to the practice. And because he was true, he got true results. So the truth of the Dharma is not something that's defined in words. The words are there as aids in the practice to help It gets you to ask the right questions and to observe things you might not have observed otherwise. That's what some of the vocabulary is for. It's like the vocabulary for tasters or those who work with very refined differences in odors. They have to develop a really specific vocabulary, and the more precise the vocabulary, the more things they notice. So the concepts are there to help you notice things you might have missed otherwise, to help you look in areas you might have overlooked, and to ask questions that might not have occurred to you before. But we're not here to arrive at a description of the world or a description of the mind. Or a description of anything. We're not arriving at a description. We're arriving at the actuality. What the Buddha gave many different names to. This is a point that Ajahn Mahabhu makes often. He said it doesn't really matter what name you give to nirvana. What's important is to get the actuality. And the Buddha made clear certain aspects about that, that it was a kind of consciousness. But he never explained how that consciousness was related to the consciousness in the aggregates. It's definitely something different. Consciousness in the aggregates has to do with consciousness that is near or far, past, present, or future. In other words, it's in time and space. Consciousness without surface is something else. But he never clarified the relationship. There was a time when one monk was talking about how this consciousness is what goes from one life to the next. And the Buddha called him in and said, which consciousness are you talking about? And the monk was saying, the consciousness that we have with the eye and the ear, nose, tongue, and body. It would have been interesting if he'd said, consciousness without service, how the Buddha would have dealt with that. But with consciousness of the senses, as the Buddha said, this is dependently arisen consciousness. And this is something that arises and falls away because it depends on conditions. So a lot of things the Buddha doesn't explain about nirvana. Because after all, ultimately it lies beyond explanation. As the Buddha said, it lies beyond the limits of description. But he does explain how to get there, and that's the important thing. And getting there is something you do inside. It all concerns qualities you have inside the mind. The problem lies inside, but the solution lies inside as well. Qualities that can be immediately present to your awareness. We're not dealing in abstractions. We're not dealing in anything far away. When my father went to Thailand, the very first time I tried to get him to meditate, his first question was, he was a Christian. Was there going to be any obstacle in his being a Christian? And John Fung said, no, we're going to talk about the breath. And the breath doesn't belong to anybody. It's not Buddhist. It's not Christian. It doesn't belong to anybody in particular. It's common property throughout the world. And if we talk about the breath, we use the breath to catch the mind, and then we can talk about the mind. In other words, your awareness right here. Then whether it's Christian or Buddhist, it doesn't have to get involved. Because the things that are happening in your awareness right now, those are the things that cause suffering, but you can also develop qualities right here in your awareness that will put an end to suffering. And the process of developing the good qualities and abandoning the unskillful qualities, what's that that's going to do to your awareness? It's going to do something that you can't anticipate. Buddha simply reminds you or reassures you, we're not committing spiritual suicide here. I'm not blanking out. There is a kind of awareness. But there's a lot that he doesn't explain. Just the simple fact that we have freedom of choice in the present moment. He never explains that. The fact that we have a range of choices, because sometimes that range is limited. It's not that we're totally without any restrictions. But there are some areas where we do have freedom of choice. He said, take advantage of that. Again, he doesn't explain it, but he doesn't have to. He's basically saying, if you want to put an end to suffering, this is what you can do. And he's interested in finding the people who see that as a really great opportunity, who've looked at the suffering they've had in their lives, whatever it is and however you might define it, and they've decided they've had enough. Those are the people the Buddha is talking to, the people who have the honesty to realize, okay, I'm suffering because of something I'm doing, but I can change the way I do things. Even if it's hard, I can do it. I don't know how many people complain, well, it's easy to say, but it's hard to do. Well, it's hard to do sometimes, but it's doable. Don't let that be an obstacle, that it's maybe hard. And this is where truthfulness of your character comes in. As John Lee says, if you're true, you'll find the truth. If you're not true, then no matter how much you may know, no matter how many of the texts you may have read, all the languages you may have studied, your ability to define this term and that term, you're not going to arrive at the truth. Because truthfulness is a quality of the heart. The Dharma is a quality of the heart. Nirvana, what is actually the ending of all dharmas, that's touched at the heart. So focus your attention here, at the heart. And that's where all the work is going to be done, and where the solution to the problem is going to be found.